the wake of what came last week, the biggest Arcade Cozy episode ever made. You didn't see it coming, but it
we didn't see it coming.
Yeah. I was about to make that sound weird. No, you didn't see it coming. Yeah. Corey, do you want me to tell you what I was going to say? I no. accidentally was about to say, but we came.
I knew that's what it was going to be.
I knew it, like, it popped into my head, and then I was like, I don't. But then I had to explain it because
they won.
Yeah. but yeah, Corey, I mean, if you're interested in knowing what's better than Ocarina of Time, listen to last week's episode. You'll find out.
You may hate us after that and stop listening, but hey, at least you listened to find out what it was.
Hope you enjoyed it. Shout out to the real ones who stayed for the whole thing.
Yes, thank you so much.
You guys did it. Corey, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing great. As I was telling you right before we started recording, I had a lovely weekend where I watched the Masters, which is golf's biggest event. Most people don't like golf. I personally like it. I don't watch a lot of golf, but I do watch the Masters because, I don't know, there's just something about it. It's nice. And I played games the whole time because it's one of those sports where you can literally, like, all right, I'm going to game for a little bit. I'm going to look up. Oh, what a lovely shot. Well, no one else is going to take a shot for another, like, 3 minutes. So, back to the grind. And a phenomenal weekend doing that. How are you, though?
Not too bad. We are preparing for my daughter's birthday this coming weekend. So, we're doing a lot of just still, I know that's kind of been my theme for the last couple of weeks, but still just doing a lot of house stuff, preparing.
Yeah.
Because even after that, it's like we have some family who are coming into town a couple of weeks after that who haven't seen the house before. So we're kind of in that mode where it's like, okay, we're doing a little bit of extra so that we don't have to do as much in preparation for other people coming. So, in the meantime, been playing some games. It's been happening. You might not know it, considering we talked all week last week, apparently, throughout that whole episode. Who would have had time, but we managed. Today, Corey, back to just a little bit of an update. Some news.
Yeah.
It's what we've been playing. I finished Rebirth. You almost finished Rebirth. Yeah, there.
I'm a couple steps from the finish line. Couldn't quite finish in time for this episode because I was getting my teeth kicked in for a brief bit. So,
It happens. We'll talk about that. Talk about a little bit more. Corey, news. We didn't get the chance to talk about it last week because I think it happened like the day we dropped the episode or maybe the day after, but there was a big showcase, the III Initiative Showcase, which was a partnership between the developers of Dead Cells, Evil Empire, Spiritfarer, Thunder Lotus Games, and then Megacrit, who made Slay the Spire, all big indie darlings, and they just kind of put together this showcase that I think people were just kind of like, it's gonna be fun, okay, that's cool, and then like they really just seem to kind of knock it out of the park with a lot of cool stuff. Corey, I at the very least, you've seen some of the stuff that came out of it. Was there anything that caught your eye?
I mean, how can Slay the Spire 2 not be thing that caught my eye? We haven't been able to talk too much about what we've been playing. I know I brought Slay the Spire a couple of weeks ago. It's a game I have continued to play, even though I think we've said before, even if we don't talk about a game each week, doesn't mean we're not playing it. I've been playing it and I've yet to beat it. I would say Balatro still keeps my eyes in terms of the predominant roguelike deck building. But I'm still pretty into it. I'm really really enjoying it. And the fact that they announced a second one, just as I'm getting into the first one, I'm like, man, I think they listened to our show, Chris. They knew. They're like, hey, this guy, he's in. Mm-hmm. Let's get him in deeper. And so I am curious of why there's a sequel to Slay the Spire 2, or Slay the Spire, why they're making a second one. Like I said, I haven't seen it, so I don't know the necessary like lore or story implications of that. But it kind of feels like a Destiny 1 to Destiny 2 thing of like, it's pretty much the same thing, but we're adding a lot of new stuff to make it just a much better game. From what I can tell, but doesn't mean I'm not very excited for it and that it probably wasn't the biggest news of the bunch.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, so looking at, there were a couple of posts on a PC Gaming Reddit's thread about there's a new game engine, new visuals. They're mm-hmm. like expanding. So it definitely seems like, you know, I doubt it's going to be so like a, you know, another game that was shown off to some extent was Darkest Dungeon 2, which is like a radical, not a radical, but is a very different type of experience than Darkest Dungeon 1. Because it is more like a roguelike and it is more, you know, it's just structured differently. I doubt Slay the Spire 2 is going to take the same approach where it is just like fundamentally a little bit different than, like I imagine it's still, you're climbing floors of the ladder or of the thing and it's structured kind of similarly. So yeah, I mean, I don't know necessarily what the thinking is beyond just, you know, creating maybe a new spire, creating like a new structure to things, more floors, new bosses, new like whatever, which again, they could sub in, but yeah, I don't know. It's coming in early access 2025. I'm all about, I mean, all of it. Like, I mean, in the it's a cinematic trailer. In it, you see the warrior and the thief, and also a new class who looks maybe like a necromancer. I don't know. He has a scythe. Yeah. He's a skeleton. You don't see the, what's it called? The robots. I would assume he might have a presence. There's also a fourth character who I also can't remember, who you don't see there. So I imagine there'll be, you know, remixes of original classes. There'll be brand new classes. It'll just like mix things up and just create a whole brand new experience. So I don't know, super excited about it. Darkest Dungeon 2 also had, I think they have like a new standalone campaign thing. I think that was the big thing that they were announcing. I still have yet to play Darkest Dungeon 2 just because it's only on PC. I think it originally released in early access a couple of years ago and hit 1.0 not too long back, but it's not on consoles yet. I would play it if it was. I have like 100 hours into the original Darkest Dungeon. Really like the original Darkest Dungeon. Would like to give Darkest Dungeon 2 a try, but just haven't yet. So a little bit of that. A couple of things that I think really caught my attention. The Dead Cells developers, they announced a game called The Rogue, Prince of Persia, a roguelike Prince of Persia game styled in the style of Dead Cells, but made by the Dead Cells developers, but Prince of Persia. Everything, the trailer has some gameplay, and I also heard, I think, a little bit of like hands-on preview stuff, and I think the conversation around it like makes me kind of even more excited about it. Apparently, like the the development for it started while the most recent Ubisoft Prince of Persia was like an alpha, The Lost Crown. And both teams worked kind of like hand in hand, not developing each other's games, but effectively like collaborating to make sure that their game was not the same as the other game. Like they were trying to make, they were trying to make sure that they were two different experiences. So they, you know, effectively like, yeah, it's a 2D Prince of Persia, but it's playing very differently. And all the hands-on like preview coverage I've heard has been like, it's like a it's Dead Cells. Like imagine Dead Cells and you're like probably 80% of the way there. Which I mean is exciting. Like I didn't 100% click with Dead Cells. I've thought at different points, especially with the Castlevania DLC, whenever that came out, like going back to it. I just haven't yet. And this, if I don't, this will definitely be a way back into to that whole vibe. It also hits early access in May. So less than a month away, which is also super surprising. The fact that, you know, 15 years without a Prince of Persia game and all of a sudden you get two within 6 months. So,
yeah, I'm excited for it. I liked Lost Crown. I haven't beat it yet. I went and looked the other day. I'm like, okay, where, how close am I? And apparently I'm like really close to beating it to where when I stopped playing to when Infinite Wealth came out. So I was like, ooh, I need to get my feet back in the saddle there. But I am very excited for this new Prince of Persia game. I'm with you in that Dead Cells has never really clicked for me. My biggest issue with Dead Cells is, I don't know if you have it, but I never feel like I entirely know what I'm doing while playing it. Like what it feels like, a lot of just like rainbow farts with some of the abilities, so to speak, of like a lot of pretty colors that do damage, I think. And I feel maybe it's just lack of play over time. That's probably what it is, truly. I just never really feel like I know exactly what's going to happen as I'm picking up things. And I don't like that feeling. So, but maybe this style of it where it's more in a genre, not a genre, but like a, an IP that I know. Like, okay, like I know what things should be here. That'll maybe make it a little bit more approachable for me. Regardless, excited.
I've always kind of been in the same boat. I think I just have, I never gave it enough time for it to really like sink in. Because a lot of people consider Dead Cells to be like one of the best roguelikes. So, you know, maybe as I'm waiting for the Rogue Prince of Persia, I'll give it another shot. Couple other things that like were announced that, you know, stood out some, but, you know, weren't like big hitters for me. Vampire Survivors gets a Contra DLC, which is weird, but also cool. I mean, great that Contra's still getting some love, some like, what, like 50 years later. At this point, there's also Never Alone 2, which I never played Never Alone 1, but it's a 10-year-old game at this point that's, I think had been announced, but this was like its first like trailer, and it's a, I don't know what she is necessarily, but she... The main character, her and her pet fox, are Arctic fox, or up in the Arctic, I guess. And they're, you know, it's a puzzle platformer. They're going around doing stuff. It shows that I did not play the first one, but you know, the art style's great. Super interesting looking. Like, I remember the first one being kind of striking and just like some of the art direction and stuff. So the fact that that's coming along, super cool. There was also Cataclysmo, Corey, from the developers of Moonlighter, one of my favorite indie games. I don't know how I necessarily feel about it. It kind of looks like a, like the original idea for Fortnite a little bit, where you're building up some, bases and is kind of tower defense-y. Doesn't look much like Moonlighter at all, but it's from them. It's coming to PC in July. So yep. Who knows? We'll see. And then Power World got a little thing saying that they're doing Pokemon Stadium, basically, I guess.
Pretty much,
that's what it was.
Yeah, it's good to have updates coming for games, because I feel like we're we talked about it more than enough that we're in a weird, not desert, because there's plenty of games still coming over the next like month or two, but we don't know what game was just announced to come out in like September or something like that, like a couple weeks. Oh, Star Wars Outlaws, that's mm-hmm. what it was.
Yeah.
Which has gone downhill in our expectations tremendously since it was announced. But we don't really know what's coming the back half of the year. Yep. And no one else is. There's no showcase coming. Technically tomorrow there's a indie for the Nintendo Direct, but an indie showcase, which isn't anything first party. Not that that makes too much of a difference in terms of like upcoming releases, but we just know nothing's going to come from Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything's coming from Nintendo until Switch 2 releases.
Yep.
You might think differently, but I'd say you're wrong. And then I feel like Xbox has just given us like some behind the scenes, like here's what we're working on. There's no release dates, but this is what we're working on.
Yep.
Kind of things. We just don't know anything that's coming. It's a weird time in the space, in my opinion.
It is. And it feels like it was, I'm trying to think. So 2016-ish, what did we have going on?
Whoa.
That was...
You're taking me back almost a decade, man.
I know. Well, because I'm trying to think that time roughly in the last life cycle where we had, we're about halfway through the PlayStation Xbox life cycle, and we were like right on the cusp of the Switch coming out. And trying to think of like where we were, looking back at it. I mean, that was the year that Overwatch released.
Yeah.
There was Dark Souls 3, Uncharted 4. But yeah, I mean, you look through it, Nintendo is virtually absent. I mean, you have Kirby Planet Robobot, that was for 3DS. You have Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD, which, you know, you can sub that in for the Thousand Year Door HD version that we're getting this year. Yep. But outside of that, Hyrule Warriors Legends, and there's nothing else. So, yeah, I mean, it does kind of track with what you would usually see at this time, I feel like. And then, you know, next year, 2017, Nintendo had Breath of the Wild. They had ARMS. They had Splatoon 2. They had Mario Odyssey. You know, the hits kept coming, Corey.
Oh, I mean, we know they're releasing. We at least know it's the next Pokemon Legends.
Mm-hmm.
Metroid Prime 4 feels like 95% guaranteed based on a lot of reporting. There was one other game that was basically that was also announced for first quarter 2025. I can't remember what it is. If it comes to me, I'll say it.
Yeah.
But we know next year will be a heavy hitting year.
Yeah.
For the Nintendo, they won't not have multiple launch titles and like a strong early year window. I think they're going to drop a ton of stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, this year, by all accounts, may just be, I mean, not slower, quote unquote. I mean, we had Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. We had new Yakuza. We'll have Elden Ring DLC. They'll be the big Star Wars thing. Two Prince of Persias. I mean, you know, plenty of stuff.
Blade.
Yeah. Stellar Blade.
Which, what's his name? Toro? Creator of Nier Automata.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he was saying, Stellar Blade was better than Nier Automata, whichever one was.
Okay.
I mean, it could have been internet trolling, but I thought I read that he had played it. He said he thought it was better.
Interesting.
Again, it could have been like fake news. We're not trying to spread fake news right now, people.
Well, I mean, according to Eurogamer, Yoko Taro said Stellar Blade is really an amazing game. I'd say that it's much better than Nier Automata. The graphics are completely next-gen, and the character design direction is amazing. The cool male characters, cute female characters are really appealing. I don't know. It's a lot of stuff.
For the man himself.
So that's high praise. So yeah, that'll also be coming out soon. But
that comes out next week.
Yeah. God, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, Corey, just in case you were worried, though, that you may run out of stuff to do, have you considered getting back into Overwatch 2?
No. Have you?
I've been interested in the news of it, I think. I mean, for one, because there's such a place in my heart for Overwatch, and I do, like, miss the fact that, you know, Overwatch doesn't fill that place anymore.
I miss the good old days of 2016.
And 2017 world. And 2018. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, but Overwatch Season 2 dropped today. That we're recording yesterday, if you're listening to this episode on the day it released, sometime in the past, if you were listening to it any later. But it apparently is supposed to kind of, for one, new hero, which I know nothing about. I have not kept up with the new heroes. They've had multiple since the last I played it. But they're doing like a couple of just, for one, like fun, interesting things. Like if I was still playing Overwatch, I would be head over heels for where they're doing some sort of like Mirror Watch event where the good guys are bad guys and the bad guys are good guys.
That's cool.
And so, I mean, not only do they have new skins, but it's also like they're also getting some like reworked abilities to met. Like, I don't know if it's going into the main thing, but I think it's like an event thing where it's like, oh, like Mercy, instead of her doing like a resurrection ultimate, she's doing like some sort of I kill everybody ultimate kind of thing. Like,
that's pretty neat.
Yeah. So they're
ridiculously overpowered. Yeah. That sounds fun.
So that's what it is. Doomfist, he has a shield kind of like Reinhardt's instead of his, instead of some of like the dashing. So he, you know, is more like a protector. Mercy has a move called Soul Burn Detonation. So just a lot of like cool little stuff, a lot of hero reworks. They're also doing a lot of other things. Like it very much seems like they are trying to pull back a little bit on some of the criticisms of like, hey, I'm reminded of one of my biggest criticisms where it was like, hey, I could play the game and enjoy it and like just play in a few matches, I would get enough coins that I could buy, like I could save up and I could get this like epic skin that I wanted or what, you know, whatever. And then they changed it to where you were like limited to getting 50 coins or something a week, and you still needed like 6,000 coins to buy like an emote. It was like, what is the point? You're making me pay for everything. So it seems like they're dialing that back. The flip side of it, they're also getting a little bit of flack because, they're opening it up apparently. Like it's been where like there's only one mythic skin available. So like with, again, Overwatch 2, super cool thing, their mythic skins being this, like you complete the battle pass, you get this skin for this character that's like customizable, which has never been a thing before, where it's like, oh, you can change the color. You can like, You can make it so Genji's like wearing his mask or not wearing his mask or whatever. And I think like if you didn't get it, you just didn't get it.
Yeah.
And now like there's still only one mythic skin available through the battle pass, but they now have a mythic shop where you can buy old ones with mythic prisms, quote unquote, that you can earn through the battle pass. And let's see. Yeah. So you can earn enough to fully unlock one complete mythic skin through the premium battle pass, but they also released their like price equivalent. And yeah, for you to get, for you to buy enough prisms. So if you want more than one, for you to buy enough prisms, to get a fully upgraded mythic skin, it would cost about $70 a piece. It's about $40 if you just want the basic mythic skin. But if you want like the fully upgraded one where you can like swap it out and do whatever, it would be like $70, which again, I mean, you're earning one mythic, you're earning the mythic skin that's current for the season. You earn enough mythic prisms each season to buy an additional one. So that's something.
It is.
But yeah, it's very, and again, like it doesn't, I think it's okay for stuff like this, for games like this to have premium content that's walled off as only premium. I get it. Like that's, I think that that is okay. So long as there is enough for you to do and earn without having to pay the money. Again, like we're in the original Overwatch, it's like, yeah, on occasion I would buy, like it would be some seasonal event. I love the skins. I'm like, oh, I haven't dropped any money on Overwatch in a while. I'll drop $20, get some loot boxes, get some skins, like whatever. And throughout the season, I'm earning enough gold, like gold points, whatever, to get gold weapons for people. I'm earning enough coins to get additional ones of these things. I would save them up and I'd buy them whenever I like something released that I wanted. But then it became like Overwatch 2. It's like, okay, I have to buy the premium battle pass or I just don't earn anything when I play. This is fun now. And so I don't know. I mean, good on them for like kind of pulling back on that. I don't know. I mean, basically all the decisions they're making are basically just kind of solidifying. Maybe you should have just kept just doing Overwatch, but better. Like why make the big promises that Overwatch 2 is going to be like genre defining PvE and we're doing better stuff now. Like, just go backwards, back to 2016 when, you know.
They should. It's very, I think it's really interesting that, not interesting, I find it shocking that they're shocked that they've been losing like a large player base because they keep making it not impossible to play. Like you can play it just fine, but like making the reward system within the game just so unapproachable, so user like, oh, what's a good word? Not just, I'm just bad. User bad.
Yeah.
Like you said, like it's, you're not earning anything. All the cool stuff is $40, $70. This is before they've even introduced like everything for the amount of money you have to put into the game on top of what you've already paid for was ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that so annoying, especially when I look at Helldivers, which I continue to play as well, where so much of how you unlock things in their battle pass is these things called medals. You get medals from doing missions and stuff like that, but you get medals whenever objectives are completed within the community. So everyone who's playing it, whenever like a major order is completed, medals are distributed out. I probably didn't play for like 2 weeks. Like two major orders went out. I came back. I had over 200 medals just sitting there and I didn't play. And they were just like, hey, the team, you did it. Here you go. And I got to immediately use all of those into the battle pass and get new things. And things like that is so player friendly of what it's like, hey, thanks for coming back. We had this thing going on that other people did. We know you didn't participate, but you're back to play. There's a new thing out here. Here's rewards just because we want you to keep playing. Come back. See what's happening. You're never going to be left behind because of that. And I think that should be a approach that a lot of games like this that have this battle pass reward system and like skins, loot, all of that, an approach that they should take as well of like, thanks for coming back. Here's like what you missed while you were away, but here's like what you would have gotten had you been here. Or at least the, maybe not fully that for something like Overwatch, but like, hey, here's a really rare skin. Thanks for coming back. Excited to have you back. Here's a Mythic Prism to work your way to a new one. And things like that mm-hmm. would be just so much better as a player to have a game want me, so to speak, and not the game, not for me to want the game all the time.
Yeah.
It might sound weird saying it, but it feels right.
Yep.
And I feel like Helldivers wants me. It wants me to dive. It wants me to spread democracy. Overwatch wants my money, and that doesn't feel great.
Yeah, well, and it's like, it's also I resist digging into this too deeply because I don't want to make mm-hmm. like a huge
I'm with you.
But I'm always reminded, like, especially as a creator, recently the just like tangentially the Bluey's season 3 ended and there has been a lot of debates about like, is this the end of Bluey, because it's set up very much like a just series finale. Bluey has a lot of episodes, but like when you compare it to something like Paw Patrol, which has been going on for like 2 decades and has like multiple movies and stuff, like it never seems to end. And like, you know, you read some of the stuff with Bluey and it's like, no, I mean, Bluey's still going on, but like they have concerns. They're like, you know, when our, like these kids are played by kids, and when these kids age out, like I just don't see recasting them. And so Bluey may just kind of move on. We may just move into a different era, or we may do something, or there may just not be any more Bluey. And there is something like, there's something powerful about being a creator and being in that position where it's like, you know, I'm telling the story and mm-hmm. we're done now. And we move on instead of just bleeding you dry forever. And like, I want you to be a part of this machine for the rest of your life. That's not fun. And it doesn't like build any sort of loyalty in my mind where I'm like, yeah, I really want to stick with the guys that just want to mm-hmm. see me broke and dependent on them forever. Which is a harsh way of putting it, but, you know, I'm sure there's some executive who would like me to be in that position. So, but yeah, Corey, any other news come to mind? One additional one, sorry to cut you off. That struck me, IKEA coming out with a gaming line of furniture.
I didn't see that.
That actually doesn't look, The Verge has an article about it that, I think sums up my like thoughts, pretty well, where it's called IKEA's new gaming furniture looks like furniture. Not Ooh. An energy drink, which I feel
That's like
is
here,
which is usually the issue with gaming furniture. Like, I have no reason to buy any of these because I'm not looking for a new chair for my living room or, you know, whatever. I will say, however, so Corey, they have a cart in there. It's like a side table that is designed to function very similarly to my cart that I use. That looks
great.
It looks better. Like, it's because, for one, it has open air on the sides. That Ooh. Is one of the things that gets me with mine is we bought one of these Target cards, and it was like one of these like viral TikTok things where people would use it as like a library card for their books or like a craft card or whatever. We got it. It's super solid. There's nothing wrong with it. But for game consoles, it's tough because it's like, you know, my Switch, it's fine in there. For the most part, it sits a little weird because it's like it has raised edges. So I have to route all the cables like over this edge. So then it makes stuff sit weird. The Xbox, totally fine. The PS5 is exactly the right size to sit down in there, which is like theoretically, okay, cool. But practically, there's no airflow. How do I get a disc out? And so my only solution has been I built like a foam base of padding and just raised it up above the edge so that it like sits up, has airflow. But like that's been one of the biggest design flaws with it, is that I'm like, I need an alternative. I need something that has open air sides, that has like, this one also has their IKEA Scottis pegboard built into it. So it actually has the, like their, I have one of their pegboards, or I have two of their pegboards like on top of each other over here. Super solid. They have it built into the thing. So you can, you know, you can put in their picture, they have their, it's not a Steam Deck, it's the Rogue Ally. It's just sitting there on the little side. And then they got like they got their Xbox down here, and there's their like, their controllers. There's some popcorn sitting on top. Like, just seems super solid. When it comes out, Corey, I'm going to get it.
Do it.
Yeah. I don't care how much it costs. It launches in September. No, I want it now.
It's good. It's a good early Christmas gift to yourself.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you're looking for some gaming furniture, it's the Braun Bowl collection from IKEA. So keep an eye out, coming out this fall. Corey, ready to talk about games we've been playing?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Let's talk about the one that we've been playing together. Not together, but together. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Yes.
I finished it over the weekend. I finished the main story and then went back and did all of the Queen's Blood stuff because I wanted to see through the rest of that storyline. Yeah. I wrote off finishing up the Proto-Relic stuff, because the Proto-Relic was the other thing I was wanting to do. I did all of the Proto-Relic world events, and then it ramps up to this conclusion. It's like, hey, come here. You got to go to this place. Suggested level 30 levels above what you are. And I was like, well, I know I'm not grinding to go do this one, this thing. So I guess I'm just not going to do it. Which, granted, it did kind of bump around in my head that I might consider doing it, because I ran a couple of side quests. That was the other thing I did. I was trying to, I wanted to do all of the piano things. I wanted to see that through. And for a couple, or at least one of them, you have to do a side quest. Like, it's one of the piano sheet musics is behind a side quest. I was doing the side quest, and like just fighting enemies in the world was like leveling. Like, I was getting a level up per encounter. Like, I did that side quest and leveled up like 4 or 5 times. Like, so I mean, there was a part of me that was like, maybe I should just grind it out.
Maybe in post game it's a much quicker system.
Maybe, to be fair, I do have the I did equip Cloud with the 100% XP boost.
There you go.
But I say that to say, like, I had that equipped whenever I was running through like the final area, and during the like multiple hours of that, Cloud leveled up one time. maybe two times. And here I was in like a 20-minute side quest and he's leveled up 4 or 5 times. So like, you know, I don't know if some of the side quests are weighted differently, you know what, but yeah, I considered it, didn't do it. But I finished the main story. And I am very interested in where things are going. We'll have a like spoiler cast discussion about it to dig in more deeply. So I won't say here, but like, you know, it ends at a point and changes things from that point. You know, when compared to like the original Final Fantasy VII, and just kind of sets things up to be both. I mean, in some cases, like feels like some Kingdom Hearts shit, like is just very. If you had replaced Sephiroth with, you know, Zemnis and all of a sudden he had lightsabers, then I would have thought I was in Kingdom Hearts 2. There's like it. The similarities are, you know, just the books, pages of similarities. It's just all there. But the, yeah, it gets really wild, but it definitely has this kind of like, I don't know, just the feeling of what is to come and the implications of like what it means and how they're going to wrap all of these things up together as they move into the next game. I think it's going to be really interesting. Again, like that's kind of how I landed with Remake, where Remake, there were things about it that frustrated me, but by and large, like I dug where the narrative was going. Like I very much am in the camp of if all you're going to do is tell me the same story again, I don't really see the point in you remaking, quote unquote, like porting something, cleaning it up. That's one thing. Like I put it on modern systems, make it more easy, like make it more accessible to play. But if you're going to bill it as a remake, I want it to be a remake. I want it to be like a reimagining of this thing. And for all intents and purposes, like Final Fantasy VII has been that, where it's not only is it, you know, redoing things and like it's also like metatextually examining them, where it's like, yeah, we actually have like we have characters in this that are like stand-ins for developers and fans. Like we're actually like examining this from a place and like what it means to create something new and to do something different than what's been done before. And so that part of it I think is what I'm super into, and I think has made me like much more interested in this whole like trilogy of remakes than I thought I would have been otherwise. So
yeah, I'm literally at the finish line. We were talking about ahead of time. I'm there, and I'm very excited to do our spoiler episode. I think we're gonna have a lot of fun doing that. I was getting worn out by the end of it. I think what sent me over the edge was like right before you go, right when the game's like, hey, it's now a full open world. You get a boat. You can do all these things. And now here's all these quests and all these different places. Go back, check everything out. I'm like, no, we're right at the end. You're telling me to go to the Temple of the Ancients. What do you mean the Grasslands has like 10 new side quests? No, stop. And that sent me over the edge with it, where I'm like, nope. I have enjoyed my time with this. There's been some things that have been just maybe a little frustrating, but nope. We're wrapping up. I can't go back and do all these other things.
Yeah.
I just didn't have it in me. I too gave up on the Proto Relic quest just because I was finding them so tedious. And there's one where it stopped halfway and then you get like a notification like 4 chapters later of like, oh, you can come back and finish this half now. I'm like, no, I was just there. You could have you could have said something while I was there, but now I'm very far away. And you're like, come back. I'm like, no, I'm just, I think it, we're going to talk about it in this, spoiler wise. I think main story wise pacing is really phenomenal. Maybe, you know, loses its way in kind of those like, not middle third, but like the two to three range of if it's a four part game, parts two to three kind of loses its way. Mm-hmm. So just, but how it delivers its open world mechanics and what is happening there is atrocious, in my opinion. And it, I find it annoying. And but all that's to say, I'm happy to be at the end, not to be done, but because it has felt worth it up to this point with how I've played. And I'm excited.
Yeah,
I'm excited to talk more about it with you and kind of discuss theories, what we got right, what we got wrong, what's going on. The end here has been brilliant. I love it. And yeah, pumped to finish.
Yeah. Very excited to see what's next. Who knows? Cool. I mean, more than likely, what, 4 years from now?
They said 2027. The directors were talking about it. They've finished the story, and they're recording voice lines right now.
Okay.
So they didn't see anything about mocap, just recording lines.
Yeah.
Grant, I don't know if they're doing mocap. I don't think they are actually. Would it make sense for them to?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
Yeah.
But,
okay. Interesting.
Yeah. It'll either be a launch title for next gen, which sounds ridiculous to say that these three games will all release on different consoles.
Yep.
Or it will sunset the PS5.
Yeah, which either one could happen. I mean, we had Ghost of Tsushima and like Last of Us Part 2 hit in the like 6 months before PS5 came out. So never know. Yeah, Corey, I'm excited about it. Look forward to that coming soon. Yeah, other than that, so after I finished that, I took it upon myself to finally dive back in on Metal Gear Solid. I started it.
Where's the nukes? You have to find them. No, don't pull. No, what are, stop.
What is this? Metal Gear? That is the
Solid.
Solid. That is the thing that it's the thing that gets me the most is like how, in complete transparency, I've never played a Kojima game previous to this. Like, have not played Death Stranding, but it's...
You're so wrong for that.
Well, and it's never been intentional. It's always been a thing where like Metal Gear Solid, like the Metal Gear, like I have a couple of cousins who I remember being really into Metal Gear Solid, like multiple times. You know, they lived a little bit further away, but like I remember going to visit them and they would be like, we were younger and they were playing Metal Gear Solid 3. And I remember like whenever one of them got married, I was like at his wedding and was one of the groomsmen like a week before Metal Gear Solid 5 came out. And I remember them talking about it then. Like it was, you know, it's always kind of been there. I've known people that play it. But it just kind of felt like it always missed. Cause like I wasn't allowed to play like M rated games until, and I assume Metal Gear Solid's M rated, I think.
I'm pretty sure it is.
Until I was like of age. And so like that would have kept me out of being able to play the first three, at least whenever they first released. I just didn't ever hop on the train. The one that is one of the things that gets me in playing Metal Gear is like how cinematic, because like legitimately, especially for that time, like I'm watching the way these scenes are presented and you can you can so tell that Kojima is like a movie nut, because it is such a, like, the cinematography, like the way things are framed and stuff, like it he very much was wanting to make like a movie out of that.
Yeah.
And it is in such sharp contrast to the cheesy ass dialogue that you hear the dialogue's so bad. Constantly. And like, not only is it like, does it sound bad sometimes, but also like just the way things are phrased, like you'll see, you know, Meryl coming down and somebody will like, it'll just show like a, how did you know it was Meryl? And it'll show like a flashback to her walking away. Yeah. And it's like her butt. And yep. It's like her butt? Her butt was, it was a nice butt. And like, it's just like the way, it's the way mm-hmm. of like framing things that I think also gives me a little bit better insight into some of the criticisms that Kojima's gotten later with characters like Quiet, specifically from Metal Gear Solid 5, who is a sniper who just like is in her bra the whole time. And like, people are like, why? And and Kojima's basically like, why not? And so like, there's a lot of that kind of stuff where, you know, it gets weirdly sexual at different points. And it's just like, it's all of these things compounded by the fact that it's just awkward dialogue. It also like, I'm playing it, you start to get it, but it never doesn't feel a little like ass. Always has a little bit of ass, even when you've got it down. And part of that is just like, it's a PS1 game. Like it's a natural thing. And you can't really get away from that. But some of it is just like, man, it's a tough game to play, which I mean, like to later games credit. I mean, from what I understand, like Metal Gear Solid 2 did a phenomenal job at like updating controls and stuff. And like it only gets better. But it's been quite the experience. It's not a very long game. Like it's only, maybe even less. Cause I feel like I'm at like maybe the 6-7 hour mark and I'm pretty close to the end. So
it drags its feet here a little bit. You are at the end, but I would say you probably have another like 2 hours left.
Okay. Yeah. How long to beat puts main story at 11 and a half. So it tracks. But yeah, one of the things that is kind of like irking me, and I'm interested just to see how it like continues to progress, like as we're playing through these different games throughout the year. But like one of the things that does kind of bother me is like how obtuse it can be sometimes. Yeah. And just how like it treats like mandatory stuff as like optional. Like for instance, like there's a part where you come under sniper fire and they're like, you can't get them. You need a sniper rifle. And it's like, okay, is there one nearby? And it's like, no.
Nope.
There's one way back at the beginning. You should have got it. And yep. It's like, okay, so now I have to run back and go find it. And I've been referencing just a lot of like Reddit threads and stuff because it's like, some of it, I'm like, okay, because in some cases, like they do have, you know, you can call the guy on the codec and he'll be like, he'll give you a hint. He'll be like, all right, like, you know, you gotta, there's a scene where you need to trick a guard to make you think you're dead. And like in my head, I was like, okay, I have this ketchup. Maybe I use the ketchup. Maybe he thinks, maybe that makes him think I'm dead. But I wasn't 100% sure. And I called the guy. He was like, maybe you should use the ketchup. And I was like, all right, at least I know I'm in the same in the same ballpark here. So they like they do give you those hints, but in some cases it is legitimately just kind of like they're like, I don't, you know, should have found it, I guess. Who's to say? Who's to say where it is? And like, so I do appreciate like a level of like some of that figuring out, like some of the stuff, being able to put some of these pieces together, kind of like, you know, again, don't want to dig in too deep, but like some of the boss fights and stuff, like really do kind of test some of those things. Some of them play like garbage, but some of them, like the ideas of it, like are really creative and really well, like just really interesting. Psycho Mantis, for instance, like really, really interesting kind of encounter. But it's just like, it definitely feels like, oh, this is an older game that was like being very experimental and very like kind of first gen of itself. So I am very interested in like seeing, okay, Metal Gear Solid 2, Metal Gear Solid 3, like how do these games take some of these cool ideas of being able to like stealth around, find these hidden items that like you're going to need later or whatever, like how does it kind of, how does it point you in those right directions? How maybe does it fail at doing those kind of things? How does it like get you around some of these hurdles and stuff whenever you're running into walls? Like I'm interested in seeing how it gets handled later on. But yeah, I mean like that's my biggest thing. Like I'm very excited to continue playing in the series. Metal Gear Solid 1, at least from somebody who has never played it before, doesn't, it is not the most fun to play, but I hope it only gets better. So,
yeah, I feel like I have a lot of the same thoughts you did, and I'll save them for our spoiler talk on it. But it's yeah, it definitely game of its time. That doesn't necessarily mean a good thing either. But I did really enjoy it, even with some of the outdated mechanics of it.
Yeah.
It was nice. I did have to play it with a guide though. It 100% I could play it without a guide, but I didn't have the patience to. But I understand some of like some people who grew up without the guides or having like the old paper manual ones. Like I could see how you would become so obsessed with this game because there are so many like hidden nook and crannies and like ways to speed run the game by like just knowing where things are and when to pick them up. You could cut out probably hours of the game because so much of the game is literally just backtracking. So glad you're playing. Glad you, it sounds like you're semi enjoying it and excited to get into the details soon.
Me too. Corey, what have you been playing?
And so been playing two other games. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on them. Just because we did like 2.5 hours last week. Want to be respectful of everyone's times. one game that I want to jump scare you with, because like I said, I was watching the Masters this weekend. I was playing a lot of, Vala Trove, some Slay the Spire, Football Manager. It was around lunch one day. I was scrolling through, X or Twitter while I was making lunch, and Fallout just came out and it's coming out with rave reviews. I'm like, you know, I should really play Fallout. And I decided to play Fallout New Vegas. Speaking of, I saw a meme from the Civil War movie where it's what's his name? It's the guy asking where he's like, we're Americans. He's like, yeah, but what kind of American are you? And it was someone being like, yeah, I'm a Fallout fan. And it was, and it said Fallout New Vegas. It's, yeah, but what kind of Fallout fan are you? And I found that hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I started up New Vegas. I've played a couple hours of it. And I, not to be Jesse Plemons, that's his name. Not to be the Jesse Plemons, you know, but what kind of Fallout fan are you? I am a New Vegas fan. I do think it's the best of them. Of the 3-4 in New Vegas.
Yeah.
I guess 76 if you're going to toss that one in there. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's wacky. I love the like old school music. The just like the 70s. Oh, why are you out? That kind of a, it's just like a chaotic old Western is really what it is.
Yeah.
And it's fun. It's nonsensical. It also plays like ass, compared to what games are now, but still like there's in this manner, there's something about it that's, more, are you good over there? Sorry.
So that's my wife hammering on the wall, apparently.
Oh, okay. So okay.
I assume that's what you're talking about is a sound.
Just here,
I'll mute myself. Just in case you don't hear that.
You're fine. You're fine. There's just something about, I guess it's nostalgia, if that's what we want to call it. It's good. Just doing dumb stuff in the wasteland, bouncing around, and I have no intention of let me play Fallout New Vegas, from beginning to end, but it's nice to be back in there. I want to watch the show because it's getting glowing reviews, and the Fallout series, I feel like we've dunked on it in the past, but probably gets a little bit more hate than deserved. Like, they are good games, and New Vegas is a really good game, and I've been digging that, and it's nice. It's kind of like whenever you're like, I should play Skyrim. And you play Skyrim for 5-6 hours, nice. That's kind of what I'm doing with New Vegas right now.
Yeah, which I feel like I need to do because I've gone back to, and I think it's just because Skyrim has been released, re-released so many times, and Fallout hasn't any stretch. Nope. I don't think there is a, you can play, Fallout 4 just got a next gen update. That game is, close to.
Did you see, because there was a fan team that was doing Fallout London, which is a huge mod that was going to be put onto Fallout 4. And they said they couldn't release it because they were confident that the new Fallout 4 update, which a game that hasn't been updated in 4 years,
yeah.
5 years,
yeah.
They said it would. They were confident it would completely crash their mod of Fallout London. So it's on indefinite hiatus because of that. And I'm looking at them that's intentional. Bethesda knew what they were doing with that. I'm sorry. And I thought that was just super messed up.
Yeah, it's gotta suck so hard because I understand, I get the timing. I get wanting to Fallout 4, it's timing out with the show. But it's gotta suck so much to be in that position where it's it would be a similar kind of thing as if, maybe not exactly the same, but you're going back, you're this game's 15 years old. They don't care about this game anymore. They're doing Fallout 76. They're doing all their other stuff. They don't care about this. And then just all of a sudden with no fanfare, they're we're going to update it. For funsies. And they're well, shit. I guess my life's work is done.
But New Vegas is on Game Pass. It's also $2 on the Steam store right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's $6 with all the DLCs included. I know they're doing a huge sale because of how well the show is doing, which we intend to both watch the show and talk about it. There's just something about it's so weird. And I think we talked about it before, to play Starfield. I'm this game sucks. But it is pure Bethesda. I think maybe its biggest issue was so much of it was in menus. I don't know what your thoughts of that are, but to play Starfield and be I don't like this, but then to go back and play Skyrim and to be playing New Vegas, this rips. This is good. And I don't know if that's rose-tinted glasses that I'm still wearing while I'm playing it. But, I mean, New Vegas wasn't Bethesda. It was Obsidian. But it plays exactly like a Bethesda game. So I'm kind of mashing them together in that. Mm-hmm. But New Vegas just throws you in, like, immediately. It has its opening cutscene where you're like, wait, what's happening? And before you can even really, like, put a lot of things together, you wake up, doctor's patching you up. And he's like, all right, get out in the world, do your thing. And you just have a quest marker of, like, spoilers, like, figure out who shot you. And instead of, you know, something like Yakuza Like a Dragon, where you're 15 hours in and mm-hmm. you're like, okay, let me figure out why I got shot. It's 2 minutes in, like, all right, you made your character, you're out in the world, do your thing. And there's something so nice about that. And Skyrim has a little bit more of, like, it's famous, you know, you're awake. But that's still maybe 15 minutes, not like subtracting your character creation aspect of it. I really enjoy that aspect of, like, we're just going to throw you into the deep end immediately and mm-hmm. like get at it. There's a whole world to explore, to see and do. It makes me, like, question, like, why did I not like Starfield? And I think we could get in a lot deeper there. But all that's to say, New Vegas rips. You should play it. It's a good time.
You're making me want to go back and play it. Yeah, I mean, I know why, like, Starfield really didn't do it for me. And a lot of it was the menus. Like, I think that is one of the big things that... so many Bethesda games does incredibly well, and why they're so revered as this, like, big open experience is the fact that, like, there are very few loading screens in many cases. Like, you can just go into Skyrim and walk for a very long time and mm-hmm. go everywhere without loading. I mean, maybe that isn't the case. Like, if you go enter into a lot of towns, like, to enter into the actual town border, you have to load into the town. But, like, you can get to the town, you can get to this bandit camp, you can get to these smaller towns, like, all of these things without going through a loading screen. And in Starfield, that wasn't the case. It was like, you know, you land on this planet and you can go do a few things on this planet, but by and large, it's kind of empty. And if you want to go to this other place, you have to, like, loading screen back into your ship. And then you have to loading screen onto, like, the ship nav thing, because you can't, like, fly anywhere either. They're all too far away. So you have to jump. Yeah. And then you're having to do that. It legitimately was, there was no room for you to actually explore. It was just, you're having to set these points, go specifically to these places, fast travel. It's as if, like, Skyrim just, or Fallout or whatever, just gave you all of the fast travel points right from the start. Mm-hmm. And then just, you were just bouncing around the place and, like, got zero sense for what is actually happening in this world. That was my biggest thing with it.
I'm with you on that. That's my current New Vegas experience. Probably won't hear much more about it because, like I said, I have no intention of playing it from beginning to end. It's just to be back in there, and it feels good to be back playing mm-hmm. that game, which is a good thing. But we'll see where that takes us. The other game I've been playing that was starting to take up a little too much time, then I had to, like, really, like, buckle myself down, like, no, we can't do this, is Civ 6 or Civilization 6.
Ooh.
If people who have been listening for a while, you know me, a game, and I think I tried playing this and I talked about it probably like a couple years ago and it didn't click.
Mm-hmm.
This was before my big Crusader Kings 3 kick.
Yep.
And so a game like Crusader Kings 3, games like Football Manager, like real-time strategy, that offers some, like insert, like a player insert into game,
mm-hmm.
like mechanic into it, really, really appeals to me. Yeah. And to give people a context of what civilization is, it is a map-based, effectively like conquest game. It's to boil it down. In Civilization VI specifically, you get to choose like historic leader to begin like your civilization, so to speak. So it could be like Alexander the Great, George Washington, people like that.
Yep.
And you start out in, it's a hex-styled map. And your city starts and a bunch of other AI civilizations will start. And you kind of start at the beginning of the civilization, you know, like stone sticks, you know, learning how to farm XYZ. And you are effectively building bigger cities, building bigger populations, making more soldiers, XYZ, at the same time as your as the AI is. And where I think it's very different from something like Crusader Kings 3 is that it's turn-based, so to speak. It's you have 500 turns. And on, if you want to make a new settler, it's going to be 8 turns before he's ready to go out and find a new city for you. You want to make a new set of spearmen, it's going to be like 4 turns. You want to build this library, that's 18 turns. Things like that. And this sounds very, people are like, wow, that's taken a while. But as you build more cities, each of them are doing these things at once.
Yeah.
And so you're creating an ecosystem like, okay, these guys over here, this is my soldier camp. You are making all my soldiers. And you're kind of building a system from there. Where I find this interesting is that it's a chess match between you and the AI, because they're all doing this as well. Mm-hmm. And you're meeting other leaders, and they're like, oh, I love what you have going on here. Look at your people. This is phenomenal. We should be friends. You're like, yeah, let's be friends. So you open up trade and things are going on, and I'm progressing, you know, my war tactics, and, you know, trying to build up a more military might, because all of that.
Of course.
Yeah. And the Russian leader, I can't remember his name, and is like, you don't care about the arts? And I'm like, I mean, they're fine. He's like, you plebeian, you peasant. And I'm like, okay, no need to name call. And then progressively went from like a very good relationship, like quickly began deteriorating, like lots of like snide comments. Mm-hmm. I can see him sending scouts my way. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what's going on? And eventually it's like a full declaration of war. Like, I hate you. I hate your guts. I'm going to burn everything you have ever known and loved. I'm like, all right, step up then. Well, you've been complaining that I don't focus on the arts and sciences. I got like 100 men back here. You got? It wasn't obviously that many, but I'm like, I don't think you're ready for this fight. And I went on just a war path. And it's just so good. The writing in that's phenomenal of how it, I'm sure there's many where like you do focus on the things that this other leader cares about, and you do build like a very strong alliance, very like prosperous friendship between the two. But he was like, early on, he's like, yeah, I rock with what you got here. Then quickly he's like, man, I hate you. And I love that. It was just very entertaining.
Yeah.
I'm like, what else is going to happen here? And so similar things are kind of going on as you're playing. But yeah, I found that so fun. It's not as, what's the word, mechanically sound as like Crusader Kings 3, where mm-hmm. I'm building military regiments and I'm like, oh, I'm going to get buzzsawed by this guy's cavalry if I only have. And it does have a little bit of RTS with like, their like cavalry, spearmen, swordmen, bows and all that, but not quite to the degree. But still, the chess match of it, all right, right? Because you progress one turn at a time. And so your military and all these people are only moving their, like, quote unquote, movement space within that one turn. Mm-hmm. And so you think everything's going fine for a turn. You hit, okay, progress the next turn. And all of a sudden you see three different sets of barbarian tribes approaching into your territory. And you're like, oh, well, all my men are on the other side over here. It's going to take them at least like six turns to make it where these guys are going to make it into my place at three, start like burning my town. And it's kind of a thing where you're like, you're having to like really think ahead of like, hey, I need to keep a regiment here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I need this town to start like having a higher population so I can get more food in. I need this side to be more mining focused as well over here because that's where more of those resources are. Yep. And so I need to also build a higher population here that way I can get more of this in. I need to protect this border. And then I'm encroaching on this guy's border and I'm trying to see what I can get away with before either he declares war or maybe like starts a small skirmish. It's fun. It's really, I enjoy it. It feels more laid back than CK3. The only thing I wish it had where CK3 is, like I said, that player like insert, you are, or you're role playing because your characters have all these personality traits and you're like, well, I don't want to give them stress. And so, you know, my heir was mentored by the wrong person. Now he's like a statistic, like warmonger. And so I'm going to play him like a sadistic warmonger and hope his heir is better.
Yep.
And so Civ doesn't quite have that. It's more of the personalities already ingrained by these leaders who are there for forever. And it's fun. It's cheeky. It makes you think in a similar way. And I like it.
Yeah, love it.
It's good.
Oh, damn it, Corey. You're going to make me pick up Civ 6.
I hope so. It's good. It has like campaigns. You can do like Alexander the Great's like conquest of Macedon. And that's something I would be interested in doing. But it doesn't, if I started one and a lot of it was already like built out. Okay. So to speak, it felt very much just like a campaign, like a preset one, which I don't know if I love. I think I really like the idea of just like me taking something from scratch. And that's kind of something like in Football Manager I enjoy. I do have like a Manchester United like save, but it's so easy. Mm-hmm. So much of the work's already done for you. So I like doing like a smaller club save, like and almost having just an idea of like, can I just get them to the top flight of their country's like league and things like that, where there is already a preset like base just based on real world, but it's more of I can kind of cultivate what I want from the beginning and like have to earn it. And that's what I really enjoy with Civ 6 and kind of starting, and what I've really come to enjoy with like CK3 instead of, let me start as King Louis in France and just, you know, conquer all of this half of the world. I'm like, can I start as like this count in modern day like Czech Republic? And can I somehow have the Spanish throne by the end of this? I think I can do that. Let's see what I get. And like that mindset or not quite that, but like where the sky's the limit for where I can really go. Like, I don't know. I find it fun. It's entertaining.
Yeah. I got you. I feel you. We'll see. Look at it, Corey. My wife brought in a cat in a basket.
A cat in a basket. If I fit, I sit.
How cute he is.
Yes. He's a...
Aww. Sorry,
I had to show you.
Yeah.
Wow. The cat's huge.
Yeah, he's a big boy. That's Lewis.
Lewis, you are a chunks.
Lewis is a big boy. And then all the rest of my cats just came into my office. Corey, what else you got?
That's about it.
That's it.
For me, I'm still working on the gold seal for the flush deck in Balatro. I've gotten very close. I've had to like stop the flush deck. It is jarring to go from the flush mindset of the flush deck and then go and play the other decks. Then I'm also working up in difficulties, but it's my brain has to like hard rewire. I'm like, no. We can run a two pair deck and be absolutely fine. Like, we're okay there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had some of those moments too where I'm, I mean, granted, my head's like, I feel like most of the time I lean flush regardless, but there have been plenty of times where I come off of a flush, off of the flush deck and am like trying to get a flush and will almost discard like a straight. Like, I'll have a straight just sitting there and I'll be like, but it's not a flush.
It's not a flush.
And I need to. I am also trying to. I'm bouncing between that and usually like one of the money decks, like the green deck or the yellow deck, are usually pretty. I think are those three are like the ones that I have the highest currently. So
check out.
Nice. Yeah. No,
that's it for me. Anything from you?
Not anymore, Corey. Next week, expect maybe a lot from me. Who knows? I'm going to finish Metal Gear Solid. I am going back and forth between diving right into Metal Gear Solid 2 or hitting some of these recent releases on Game Pass and just some other stuff that I haven't touched in a little while. So look for that, Corey. A lot of stuff coming from old Chris over here.
Same. I think I will be doing Persona 3 Reload.
Ooh, thought it was a summer game, Corey.
It's like 85 degrees. We're there.
It's true. I sat down this morning and I was drinking my coffee and I looked at the temperature and it was like over 80 degrees. I was like, it is too early for this. Mm-hmm. I got a copy of Persona 3 Reload and Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, a couple of weeks ago because they were having like, I think Amazon or Target, somebody was having a sale where I effectively, like, I got both of them for like 60, 70 bucks. Nice. So I was like, they're both basically like half off here. I'll just go ahead and get them. So I got them. Primed, ready to go. I'm definitely going to take a little bit of a break from. Did you ever finish Infinite Wealth?
No, but I went and looked without spoilers, and I'm like at the doorstep there too. So I'll probably finish that too.
Finish it, Corey. Corey. Between now and then, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet?
They can find me over on Instagram at hash.slingin.thrasher, or they can email us at arcade_cozy@gmail.com. Or is it arcade.cozy@gmail.com? I don't know.
arcadecozy@gmail.com. Abby, where can people find you on the internet if they want to find you on the internet? You can find me at nothing either. I don't do much right now. Subject to change. Johnny B. Good 89. You can find him on Instagram though. He does our music. Love him. I've also been listening to a lot of his music as well recently for like work. He has a good album, Be Good Farms, I think is the EP. It's very like Stardew Valley. Very like, but super good. Like, all the tracks on there are just really solid. Not a long thing. I think it's 4 or 5 tracks, but really, really good. So listen to that if you want some of that energy. Corey, until next time, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your
hobbies be too?